Hey guys, this is Beth Golay. And before we get started with Marginalia, I just wanted to say that KMUW's podcast platform is made possible by High Touch Technologies, a software technology and business communications company that provides products, services, and support to all industries. High Touch brings the human touch to technology with a world-class team of industry experts. Learn more at hightouchtechnologies.com. And now, here's Marginalia.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia, notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
It's that time of year again, time to look back at our reading from the past year. For this episode of Marginalia, I invited Suzanne Tobias to join me. Suzanne is an opinion writer at the Wichita Eagle, our local newspaper here, and she's also our book reviewer at KMUW. We are talking about our favorite books of the past year, not published in 2019, but read in 2019. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation.
Yay! Our favorite reads of the year!
Yay!
Heading into the roaring 20s.
Oh, that's so right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
It was a roaring year for reading for me. How about you, Beth?
We'll talk about some of the things that I've read, but I think at last count, I might be at about 62, 63 books.
That's about where I am, too. I think almost exactly where I am. I haven't checked since I finished an audiobook real recently. But yeah, I'm about there, 60 to 65, something like that, which is fewer books than last year, but that's okay.
Because
reading is not a competition.
Are you sure?
I make anything a competition.
It feels like one. Okay, so we have each selected our 10 top reads, and we're just going to say a few words about them. These are not necessarily, for me anyway, they're not necessarily books that were published in 2019. These are just from the list that I read in 2019.
And that is the same for me. Also, we really haven't compared these lists, so it might be a little surprising. I don't know if we're going to double up or not. But most of mine are published in 2019 just because in my book review position, that's kind of what I focus on. But some are from a little further back.
Well, and I think a lot of my list will reflect something that you and I have been doing all year, which is we each got a copy of James Mustick's book, 1,000 Books to Read Before You Die.
It is such a great book. Everyone should have that. Any avid reader would be well served to have that book on their coffee table.
And at the beginning of 2019, we each said we would try to read one book out of that list each month.
That's right. And you've been much better about it than me.
I was going to ask, have you succeeded?
I don't think I've read 12 from that book this year, but that is one of my major goals for 2020, is to read more of those. But I have read a few from, I've added to my check marks in the back of that book.
Well, the first book on my list is actually one that kicked off my 1,000 Books journey. It is Gilead by Marilynne Robinson. It was not a book released in 2019, and it won the Pulitzer 1 year, several years ago.
Yeah.
Gosh, at least 10 years ago.
I know. It was also, I read that this year too, and it was my, in the Read ICT Challenge, it was my book that I had avoided or didn't finish, and I'm so glad I went back to finish that one.
I am too. And in fact, I read and listened to it simultaneously, which I think is why I was able to get through it this time. Because to me, the narrator really made the book. He gave off this vibe of being like this quiet, thoughtful soul. And that's what I could really just, I could hear it in his voice as I read along. And that's what got me through that book. I mean, I loved it. It made my list. It made my top 10.
Such a quiet, just so well written. Is that an epistolary novel? I can't remember now. Was it diary entries?
He wrote it.
Yeah.
He was writing his pages.
The narrator
was.
Because the Read ICT Challenge for 2020, one of the books on the list, one of the categories is an epistolary novel, which is, you know, something told in letters or emails or journal entries or documents of some sort. So that would actually be good for the 2020 challenge.
I agree.
Yeah.
And what's first on your list?
First on my list is a surprise for me, is Unfollow by Megan Phelps Roper. I was just overwhelmed by this book. I loved it. It's a memoir by a former member of the Westboro Baptist Church, and it is just astoundingly written. I tore through it. I read it in a weekend. And it's one of those books I read and then thought a lot about afterwards. It just really changed my perspective on a lot of things, including extremism and that sort of, you know, those issues. So also she was at a local bookstore here as part of her book tour, and the conversation with her there was incredible. So I really, really like that. It's for a nonfiction book to top my list for the year is just unusual.
And you reviewed that book for KMUW, so people can go back and listen to that.
That's right. Several, and I will note the ones that are on my list that have reviews attached. So yeah, they are online at KMUW.org.
And second for me, and I should also say that these are not in order that I liked the book. They just happen to be the order that I wrote them down on my list
right.
as I went through.
Could be
list.
Like the order you finished them or something.
Right. So second for me is The Iliad by Homer.
Oh, Gilead and Iliad.
True.
All of your titles
no.
rhyme?
Okay. You know, prior to this year, I had not read Homer. This read was for a world literature class that I took at Wichita State. We had to read a classic and then read a contemporary rewrite of that classic, and we had to do that for three different books. And it took me a while to sort through the language so I could, you know, try to understand the story, so I could figure out who was fighting for the Greeks and who was fighting for the Trojans. You know, which gods were aligned with which side. And which characters, like Agamemnon and Achilles and Hector, et cetera, which ones I was supposed to like and not like. But, you know, in the end, I was so glad that I read it, because now I have a better understanding when I see contemporary references
yes,
to that book.
I bet.
That I
bet
was clueless before.
That yeah, I bet it really, yeah. I mean, that gives you such a great background on so many stories. There's so many retellings. Now, have you read The Odyssey?
Not yet.
Okay, so you read the Iliad.
Right.
First. A lot of people, I guess, start with the Odyssey, right?
The Iliad's first.
I have read neither, I am embarrassed to say. Beth's books are much more highbrow than mine,
well,
with all the literature classes she's in. So I'm
right.
going to be a good balance, especially. And I guess I'll go on to my next
yes,
one.
Yes, your turn.
Yeah, it definitely a left turn from the Iliad to Elizabeth Gilbert's City of Girls, a sexy romp through 1940s New York City. I adored this book. Again, I have said before, and I will say again, Elizabeth Gilbert can do no wrong for me. She is one of my favorite authors. She's one of those authors that if she puts a book out, I will get it and I will read it as quickly as possible. This was a just joyful, rich, just, I don't know, champagne cocktail of a book is how she described it, I think. I also have a review of this one on KMUW.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. It was just a fantastic book, and it lived up to expectations, which I always love in a book.
My third book is Cemetery Road by Greg Iles.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first time I had read Greg Iles, and once again, my face is red because of that. I enjoyed the book, but I really enjoyed my interview with him. We had some funny conversations that I assured him would never make it to the podcast, and they haven't.
Oh, well, now I'm intrigued.
But one thing I recall about the interview is when I asked him about his editing process, because this book is nearly 600 pages, and I asked him if he started with a 1,200-page first draft and whittled it down to 600, and he said, "You're reading the first draft, Beth."
I hate him.
And you can hear my audible gasp in the podcast. First, I love it when authors remember my name during our conversation. So when he said Beth, mm-hmm. it was just, you know, that helped. But additionally, I was just amazed at his writing process. He writes it all in his head. So when he gets it down on paper, it is the first and final draft. It's
yeah.
kind of amazing.
Wow. I remember that interview being, yeah, especially entertaining. And people can go back and listen to that, too.
That's right.
The previous Marginalia podcast.
That's right.
Fantastic.
You can't. I did not interview Homer, though.
Yeah. Darn it. My next one on my best reads for 2019 is My Year of Rest and Relaxation by Atessa Moshfegh. I read this. This may have been the first book I read in 2019, and I listened to it on audio. It was just dark humor, which is right up my alley. Basically, the setup is this. A privileged millennial decides she has deaths in the family, and she decides to take a year off from everything. She gets really drugged up by a horrible psychiatrist that she finds, I don't know, in the yellow pages somewhere that will prescribe anything she wants, and proceeds to spend the next year in bed or near bed And believe it or not, it's a compelling read. It's just so well told. It makes me want to go back to Tessa Moshfegh's to read some of her previous novels. She also wrote Eileen. Mm-hmm. She has Homesick for Another World. I think that's a collection of short stories. I want to check those out this year. On audio, this was just an incredible story. Kept me listening for sure.
My next one is Confessions of an Innocent Man by David Dow. And this book is a fictional novel about a man who was wrongfully accused of killing his wife. He was tried and found guilty and then sentenced to death. And he ends up being exonerated, and then the second half of the book begins. You know, David Dow is a lawyer who represents death row inmates. So I liked this book because it was smart, and it was so much more than a murder mystery. It was really well done, and it just, the writing surprised me, just that it was so well written. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was a murder mystery, but really, really, really well done.
Wow. I'll have to check that out because that is not my common genre at all.
Mine either.
Wow. Okay. My next one is a way back read. It was published in the 1960s, Stoner by John Williams. Again, very similar to Gilead, sort of a everyman, you know, kind of tale. I mean, it's the story of a man who comes from the rural areas of Missouri, goes to off to college, falls in love with literature, and decides to pursue literature and become an academic. But it's just, I don't know, it's just really a sad but sweeping tale of his life. And I know it's had a renaissance of sorts mm-hmm. lately. It's kind of a new buzz book. And I don't know if that's because of the New York Review of Books edition of it, which is beautiful. They all are. But that's the one I picked up. And anyway, so I think a lot of people are, you know, just discovering it because of that, maybe.
That is one I do plan to read this year because you have spoken so highly of it for this entire year. And I'm embarrassed that I didn't have time to get to it because I really, really, really want to.
So many books.
True.
You know, and they keep coming out. So it's really kind of, yeah, it's a mess.
My next one is The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker. And in that
speaking of mythology.
Right. In that same World Lit class I mentioned, the contemporary rewrite of the Iliad was Omeros by Derek Walcott. But I added another contemporary rewrite in my final paper, which I included in my comparison, and it was Pat Barker's. This retelling was from Briseis's perspective. She was a queen who became a spoil of war and was gifted to Achilles as reward for killing like 60 or so enemies in one battle. And, you know, listeners can't see that I'm using air quotes when I say enemies.
Air quote enemies.
Because the men killed were Briseis's husband, brothers. They were her people.
Oh, wow.
And so this was a fascinating look at this Trojan War from the female slave perspective.
Wow. That and that also made, if I remember correctly, it made either the long list or the short. Well, it made the short list for the National Book Award, I thought.
For the Women's Prize for Fiction,
yes,
right?
Yes, you're right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, the Women's Prize for Fiction because
Circe was on there too, right.
Yeah, which I have not read yet, but you know. It's on my stack.
I have it.
Yeah, I have it too. My next book for 2019 is Three Women by Lisa Tadeo. I also reviewed this for KMUW. Oh my goodness, a fabulous journalistic project. Lisa Tadeo spent 8 years researching female desire and sexuality, and she followed three women, hence the name, one being a young woman who was allegedly, you know, had an inappropriate relationship with a teacher in high school. Another, it was a frustrated housewife in the Midwest who has a fling with a former boyfriend. And then the third is a restaurateur. She owns the restaurant with her husband, and they have some interesting, let's just say interesting bedroom experiences. very, very... This was a buzz book of the year, too. People just talked and talked and talked about this book to where I just had to read it, and it did not disappoint. I would suggest this for book clubs, especially female book clubs, for lots of talking points in this one.
It also made the NPR Book Concierge.
That's correct.
And
yes.
As your review, people can find your review through that listing
yes,
as well.
So. Yes.
My next one is 2 Years, 8 Months, 28 Nights by Salman Rushdie.
Oh. Yeah.
And this, once again, same class, but this one was the contemporary rewrite of 1001 Nights. So Rushdie's version, his ability to hide so many Easter eggs throughout the story, to bring in so many contemporary references from like what's happening in the news these days. It was just fantastic, and I absolutely loved it.
Okay, my next one is a middle grade book that I listened to on audio. I'm not quite sure when it was published. The War That Saved My Life by Kimberly Brobaker Bradley. Again, it's historical fiction intended for middle grade readers, but, you know, I'll tell you, young adult and middle grade books are not just for kids and teenagers. They often are just so well written, and this was a heartwarming story of a girl growing up in World War II. She's a British girl, and there's the invasion of Britain. Her family sort of, she escapes along with a lot of children, and they're placed in essentially foster homes elsewhere in the country, and it's kind of all about her experience, and it was just fantastic. Again, I listened to this on audio, and I highly recommend it. The narrator was really, really good. You know, sometimes that makes a huge difference in an audiobook.
It can kill it,
so, The War That Saved My Life by Kimberly Brobaker Bradley.
My next one is Bunny by Mona Awad.
Oh, that was controversial.
Yeah, we read Bunny for Literary Feast, and I spoke with Mona Awad about the book for this podcast. And when I dropped the episode, this is what I wrote: that Bunny was set in a setting that closely mirrored Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, one of the schools from which Awad earned a degree. Her main character, Samantha, is a lonely MFA student in a workshop with the, air quote, bunnies, mm-hmm. a group of rich, air-kissing, hair-braiding, sweater-set-donning young women who are a bit off. And while Bunny dabbles in the magical, Awad grounds it in realism. And so I found the book intriguing and the conversation enlightening, especially after I learned that Awad's dissertation was on fear in the fairy tale, and it made a lot more sense.
Oh, I like when context and background knowledge about what went into the writing of a book makes a big difference in how you see it.
Yeah. And so that did come out in 2019.
Yeah, great. My next one is another of my go-to authors, Anne Patchett's The Dutch House. This has made a lot of end-of-the-year lists. It is a kind of a modern-day fairy tale, I guess you could say, but it is very intriguing because most of the book takes place in a car. It's just a brother and sister talking outside this house of theirs in a car, but the house becomes a character. The brother and sister relationship is unlike really anything I've seen in literature in a long time, if not ever. Anne Patchett is a pro at time, at moving through time seamlessly, sometimes in the same paragraph. You could be, the characters could be in the present and then back to the past and then in the present again. And it's just so seamless and wonderful. As a writer myself, I found myself going back through paragraphs and just saying, how did she do that? It was just incredible. Also, I read it, but I hear that the audiobook on this is fantastic as well. It is narrated by Tom Hanks.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. So, yeah, I think that would be a good, because it's told from the point of view of the male, the brother. So,
okay.
Yeah,
I'll have to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my next one is called Rules for Visiting by Jessica Frances Cain. And this one surprised me. I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but I do.
Didn't it look precious?
Yeah, and this cover and the title indicated that it would be like a fluff novel.
Like chick lit. I know people hate that term.
But it was anything but. A young woman is gifted time off from her job, and she uses that time to visit four old friends, and she calls them Fortnite friends. The protagonist is a little bit awkward at first, but she grows on the reader as she grows along the way. She's guided by Emily Post, The book is peppered with literary references, and it was delightful.
How cool. I want to check that out. That was a good sell on that one.
Yay.
My next one is Ask Again Yes by Mary Beth Keene. She was in Wichita as part of Author Day not too long ago promoting this novel. And it is very much like The Dutch House and other novels that I love. It is dysfunctional family tale. Dysfunctional family saga is right up my alley always. This one dealt a little bit with a lot with mental illness, domestic violence, lots of different issues. But I did review that for KMUW as well, so that review lives on the site. But Ask Again Yes by Mary Beth Keene made my list.
My next one is titled Death of My Aunt by C.H.B. Kitchen. And I read this in August after I discovered it among the 1,000 books list.
Oh.
It was described as, and this is a quote, that kind of book that, discovered unexpectedly on the shelf in a friend's guest room during an overnight visit, will make you happily late for dinner and eager to turn in early after the meal is done.
Oh, I love that.
And in spite of the topic, which, you know, was about the murder of his aunt, it was lovely. It was just a nice diversion before the fall semester began.
Do you know when that was published? Or around about? I'm curious.
I have that book, the 1,000 anyway. Books. Oh, look. Maybe the 20s or 40s. Or
okay,
let me look.
So it is.
Looks like maybe 1929.
Okay, yeah. Death of my aunt.
Yeah.
My next one, number 9 on my list, I guess, and these are not really in ranked order either, is The Lager Queen of Minnesota by J. Ryan Straddle. And I had an interesting experience with this book because I hadn't read his previous novel.
Kitchens of the Great Midwest.
Yes, thank you. Kitchens of the Great Midwest. But I had heard a lot of good things about Lager Queen, and it was about brewers, craft brewing in Minnesota, and also a sort of a sister relationship family. Another family saga, but with beer. So I was on board for that. But I was really on board after he came for an author event here in town, and he was one of the most charming people I have ever experienced at an event like that. You know, he read from the book, of course, a little bit, but then he just talked about his life, and he was just super charming, an infectious laugh. And one of the things I remember, and I still quote this from the book, is as the women are learning about craft beer and tasting different types of beer, these are people that are, you know, raised on kind of Budweiser-type beers, and they try an IPA for the first time. And one of the characters says, "It tastes like dirt that's been burned on a grill." So I remember just loving that line, and I say it every time because I don't like IPAs. Every time I taste an IPA, I don't particularly prefer either. But he was so charming. I left that author event just thinking, I want to read this right now. And I did. And it was a charming book, just like he is. So, Lager Queen of Minnesota.
And I interviewed him for Marginalia as well.
Right.
So the conversation can be found. And I think I forgot to mention that I interviewed Jessica Frances Kane about Rules for Listening as well.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, great.
So my last book is Persuasion by Jane Austen.
What? Because you took an Austen class.
Yeah, finally, a different class. This is not world literature, but it was one of the classes I took this semester.
That's not one you hear people bring up very often from her. I mean, you hear, Pride and Prejudice
right.
is my favorite novel or whatever, but Persuasion.
Right. I brought it up last night at Lit Feast, and somebody said it was her favorite, too.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, in this class, the class was titled Jane Austen. And so I read Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, Emma, Mansfield Park, Northanger Abbey. And then my favorite happened to be the last one I read, which was Persuasion. And I just, if you haven't read Persuasion, if you've read other Jane Austen and you haven't read this one, you just need to do it.
Is there a movie based on the retelling?
Probably.
Is there a retelling?
If so, I've not seen it. I heard that The Lake House was about it.
Oh.
You know, with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves.
Oh, really?
Because it does make an appearance a couple of times.
Huh. So if I have, again, am embarrassed to say, have not read Jane Austen at all,
right.
And I always think I should start with Pride and Prejudice, but you would you suggest Persuasion as a first?
Or do it last, so it's the one that stays
okay.
with you.
So I have to read all 6. All right.
You don't
I see how you play.
To. No, you don't have to.
Beth is like, well, I had to read them all. You better, too. Just so you can judge. My last one on the list is one of the most recent books I read. I started the year great with My Year of Rest and Relaxation, and I ended it great with Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. Again, my most recent review. Oh, my gosh. Just, again, dark humor. The premise being two childhood friends who met at a boarding school and had some weird history, two women become reunited in adulthood when one of the women asks the other to be a governess for her husband's children from a previous marriage. Now, these children have a particular challenge to them, and that is every time they get upset or angry, they catch fire, literally. So there's a little bit of, obviously, magical realism, very quirky, but the narrator of this novel, again, was just so compelling and engaging that she just really made it. But it's, Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So I know I want to talk to you about the categories for next year's
Read ICT challenge.
But also, do you have anything that you're looking forward to reading?
Oh, my goodness. Well, top of my list for 2020 is Emily St. John Mandel's new novel, The Glass Hotel, which I believe comes out in February or March. It's the first quarter of 2020, and Emily St. John Mandel is the author of Station 11, one of my favorite books of all time. I read it for a second time for the latest Wichita Big Read, but I just love that novel so much, and I can't wait to see what she does next. How about you?
I'm reading American Dirt right now.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, too. Everyone's talking about it.
I agree. I'm hoping to talk to her as well, and I believe it's going to be our February Literary Feast selection.
I believe that's true. And the January Literary Feast selection is Mary Toft. Or The Rabbit Queen.
Or The Rabbit Queen.
That is just like a subtitle, sort of, or it's part of the title. Anyway, again, that seems like a really odd book that I'm looking forward to.
This woman, apparently, I don't know when that takes place, but she had convinced doctors that she could give birth to live rabbits.
Okay. Well, you had me at give birth to live rabbits. I'm there for it. And I will read it. I can't wait. The Read ICT Challenge was just announced on December 29th. The 12 new categories for our fourth year of the challenge. And it's just getting bigger and bigger and better and better. We have the Wichita Eagle has a partnership with the Wichita Public Library. And so we'll have some book swaps and some book talks and some events to go along with it. But basically, you can get the categories. There's a Facebook group called, I think the name of the group is Wichita Eagle, hashtag Read ICT Challenge. And that's just a really great community of local readers sharing book recommendations and book talk and any sort of book news. So that's a good thing to join up with if you're interested. But the 12 categories, you want to talk about them?
Yeah.
Category number one is a book with a number in the title. And I don't exactly know what I'm going to read for this yet, but a great book I read in 2019 that would work for this is Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're thinking of reading that one, which is fantastic, that would be great.
You could read 2 years, 8 months, 28
yes,
nights
you
by
could.
Simon Rushdie.
Absolutely, you could. There's so many. Life of Pi.
that's cheating. Wouldn't
no,
it be?
No, it's a number.
It's no, his name.
No, it's Pi, P-I.
Yeah, it stands for Pazine.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
I don't think it's cheating. Pi is a number.
Okay.
Here's what I want to say about the challenge is these categories can be stretched and molded and made to fit any number of types of books. And that's sort of the purpose of this challenge is to encourage people to read more broadly, to maybe consider a book that they wouldn't have considered otherwise. But it's so fun for me to go through my stash of books and figure out things that might go along with this. 1,000 Splendid Suns would be good for this category. Yeah, there's just any
1001
number.
1001 Nights?
Yes. The 13th Tale.
That's right.
So, yeah. Now, category number two is a fix-it, how-to, or self-help book. Again, not my genre, but fix-it, how-to, or self-help. That covers a lot of different areas. Number three is one of my favorites, an epistolary novel. We kind of talked about that earlier, but that's a novel told in letters or diary entries. Dracula is a famous epistolary novel.
Oh, interesting.
On my all-time favorites shelf is 84 Charing Cross Road, because that's told in letters between this woman in New York and a bookstore, and an old bookstore owner in Great Britain, I believe.
Was like Guernsey Literary.
Yes,
that was too. Yeah.
So basically anything that has. I'm listening to a book right now. I'm almost done with a young adult novel called To Night Owl from Dogfish. And it's all emails and letters and that sort of thing. So that's really great, too.
Another one that would be fun would be the I think there are two by Julie Schumacher. What the Shakespeare?
Yes, and Dear Committee Members.
Yes,
and very funny too.
Yes.
That was one of the categories for 2019 was a laugh out loud book, and that was a pick for that. Okay, category number four is a speed read, and that's a book less than 100 pages. So that will be fun to find and a little gimme for people. You can like find one of those, or a novella. I think maybe some of the Steinbeck. Short Steinbecks are less than 100 pages.
I'm thinking like the Graham Swift. Was Mothering Sunday?
I don't know. It might be a little over. But here's the thing. It doesn't. Yeah. You make this work for you.
Okay.
You can also log your reading at wichitalibrary.org/readict. And at the end of the year, if you complete all 12 categories, you're entered for a drawing for a prize. Category five is a book about someone you admire. So that could be a biography. There's
obviously the Michelle Obama's Becoming is still, is it still on the bestseller list? That was a big read from last year. But really, anybody could be a historical figure or whomever. Category six is a book that has been or will be adapted to the big or small screen. So any number of possibilities there, book to movie type things. You know, anytime a movie comes out, and if it's based on a book, I think I can't see it until I've read the book. What was the latest one? Motherless Brooklyn.
Oh, yes.
And I saw that the movie came out, and I haven't read the book, but maybe I'll do it this year. Category seven is a selection from a celebrity book club. Now, obviously, there's the Oprah Winfrey Book Club that started it all. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that list is available, pretty widely available online if you want to see what she's selected over the years. But nowadays, there are so many different celebrities getting into the book club game. There's Reese Witherspoon. There's Jenna on the Today Show, Jenna's Book Club. Sarah Jessica Parker has a book club. So
she has her own imprint.
That's right. That's right. So basically any selection. Again, I mentioned Daisy Jones and the Six as a book with a number in the title. It could also fit in this category because it was a Reese Witherspoon book club pick. So, yeah. So check out some of the celebrity book club selections. And there's a lot to choose from there. Category eight is a book written by an author new to you. So that could be a debut book or it could be just a classic author that you haven't read. Maybe I'll read Jane Austen, Beth. That would be an author new to me. Maybe I'll read all of them. Category nine is a book featuring a strong female lead. This is kind of in reference to the 100th anniversary of the women's right to vote, which will be celebrated next year. So find a book with a strong female lead. That's not too hard to find these days.
Jane Austen.
That's right. A lot of Jane Austen books. Category 10 is a book everyone's talking about. And that's last year we had a book that's been in the news. It could be, you know, a buzz book like Three Women was. It could be the novel of the year, like Where the Crawdads Sing.
Oh, right.
It could be Anonymous, the political book of the week or whatever. But just a book that everyone's talking about. Category number 11 is climate fiction. It's also known as cli-fi. So fiction or natural disaster. There are a lot of apocalyptic type novels that take place because of global warming or something happens to the Earth's atmosphere. And The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah.
Which is bleak. I'm reading it now. But that would definitely count for this category. And then finally, category 12, which is always category 12. It stays pretty consistent in our challenges. An author visiting Kansas in 2020. And that will encourage folks to get out to their local bookstores and libraries to meet authors as they come through town, wherever you happen to be. We had lots in 2019, mm-hmm. just really, really nice events. But yeah, so that's a book by any author that's visiting Kansas in 2020. And it could also be a local author, too. So.
Well, you know, something you mentioned reminded me of something I learned a couple of weeks ago, whatever. And it was when Merriam-Webster, they released their word of the year, which was the singular they. But some of the other words that were the most looked up were words like quid pro quo and impeachment and things like that. But one word that made that list that I know came from literature was crawdad.
Because of Delia Owens' novel. Wow.
Which I think is fantastic.
That is fantastic. Yeah, so people looked up crawdad to want to see, what is it? Is it crawfish? Is it, what is it?
These crawdads can be referred to
and
as
other
things.
And that is Where the Crawdads Sing.
Yes,
By Delia Owens. And that was, again, just a real, it's just hot seller, hot book for some reason. It was a great novel.
Well, I always love the challenge that you've mentioned that it's in the fourth year. And you tagged me on Facebook when you first...
The very first one,
You hadn't put the categories together, but you just kind of tagged three people, if I remember right.
People that I knew were readers.
Yeah. And then it grew. And I belong to that Facebook group. And it's a great community. I love to see what other people are reading. Everybody kind of... They help each other out. I posted on there a few weeks ago because one of the categories was a book recommended by a child.
Child or teen, right.
And so I put on there, does anybody have a kid I can borrow? I need a book recommendation. And I received so many, comments with feedback. My kid says to read this.
I just think it's such a refreshing change for Facebook to just know you can go onto a group and everyone's nice to each other and talking about reading. It's just a nice place to go. We do have some debates on that page, though. I know that My friend Cheryl and I just talk constantly. It's just sort of a joke with us now about The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt. She could not stand that novel, and I like it. So anytime The Goldfinch makes any list, which it often does, of great book club books or whatever, you can see Cheryl's like little tongue out emoji. So we can have debates too. Okay.
Well, I wanted to mention one of my projects that I was a part of this last year. And for the record, I do not have a horse in the race or a dog in this fight, but I guess I would say I have skin in the game because I did the layout for Wichita's newest literary magazine, Voltron. And that is one of the characters from Balzac's novels. Todd Robbins is the editor and publisher, and I met him from my days at Watermark. And he put two issues out during 2019, and there are some great pieces in here.
Yes, I love the fact that we have a literary magazine in Wichita now. I think it's super exciting. I think he's doing a great, great job curating that.
Yes, and it's my understanding that he's going to try to put three out in 2020.
Fantastic.
And so,
I have my collection going.
I
have all both of them, and I will get all the subsequent issues. I highly recommend local readers especially pick that up.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Do you have any other reading goals for the year?
Oh. Do you have any reading goals?
Well, I'm giving this some thought now. This is the time of year when I set my reading goals for the coming year, and I have always set a number goal. On Goodreads. I use Goodreads to track my reading. It's an app and a website. But I'm having second thoughts about that. For one thing, I didn't make my goal this year, and it just is kind of a bummer, but I still am reading plenty. But I just don't think the number means much. I set a goal of 75 books this year, and like I said, I think I read in the 60s. But I think when you make those types of goals, you get to the end of the year and if you're close to reaching it, you're looking for short books that count or something. And it just seems, I don't know that serves my purposes. So I want to change the way I approach my reading goals and basically, focus more on, I'd like to read more backlist books. I say that every year, though, because I love the new and shiny toys and I have to have the newest published things that everyone's talking about. And then I forget about the ones, from 4 or 5 or more years ago. So I'd like to read more of those this year.
And I think I'd like to continue with the one a month from the 1,000 books list.
I would like to continue that as well. And I will try and be better this year about that one because that's such a good list.
It is such a good list.
Oh, yeah. And I highly recommend James Mustick's e-newsletter. He puts out, I think it might be once a month. It's chock full of great, links to bookish stuff. And he is also compiling the next 1,000 books, extra long life edition or something like that. And so there's other titles in there. But it would take me forever to get through the list. I can't remember how many I've read, but that's pretty shameful.
I think I doubled mine
just
this last year.
Yeah. So if you add 12, that's a start.
I think maybe I need to read more of the new shiny.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been between my class and that list, I didn't always read what was new this year, and I think I missed out on a lot.
Well, it's still there. You can get to it when you get to it. But so we'll sort of maybe try and read more like each other in 2020. I'll try and read more classics and backlist, and you try and read the new shiny recently published books.
Okay.
All right.
Deal.
Well, have a great reading year, Beth. I'm looking forward to talking with you more about books in the coming year.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
That was Suzanne Tobias, KMUW's book reviewer and opinion writer for the Wichita Eagle. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torrin Anderson. Our editor is Luann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
It's my favorite Taylor Swift GIF. Is it GIF?